The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Oh, man, it is a busy day here. So busy that I'm walking in the studio right this second. Welcome to The Big Show. We are coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. And we have a jam-packed show for you this afternoon. In fact, I just got off the phone. We are going to talk, literally, just got off the phone. We're going to talk at 1:30 this afternoon with the Good Samaritan at the Seattle Center who, when he saw a man stab his estranged wife to death last Friday night, this Good Samaritan pulled out his concealed carry weapon and was able to hold the killer or the alleged killer until the police arrived. And he's going to share his story with you and me coming up at 1:30 this afternoon. At 12:30, the coach of the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, he's going to spend a half hour with us to talk about where they are at the midpoint of this season and preview the big game coming up Sunday against the Los Angeles Rams, a game you will hear right here on your home of the Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. So as we get rolling on a very busy afternoon, let's get right into the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
I want to talk a little bit about something I got a ton of feedback on yesterday. I was talking about the hero cop who ran into that bar where the shooting was taking place in Southern California two nights ago. A cop who gave his life because he was running toward the gunfire when everybody else was running away. And I talked about how on that very same night that that cop went into the bar, there was a street protest down in Portland where people were chanting this.
Cops are bastards! All cops are bastards!
I'm trying to think of, like, there's a statistic that 40% of police, and this is what is reported, that they beat their wives.
Oh my God.
And that's just what's reported.
Okay, so they're just out spouting nonsense statistics. They're chanting, all cops are, you heard what they chanted. And I said, and here's a cop who gave his life trying to save innocent people's lives. No, not all cops. In fact, it is the tiniest minority of cops. But I said, this is increasingly becoming the voice of the left, this anti-cop, this hatred of our police officers. And I will tell you, and I really do appreciate when you take the time to send me an email, to send me a text message. And I got a bunch of text messages and emails from people who were self-described liberals, people on the left. And they were asking a question, and many of them in a very respectful way. Why are you lumping all of us on the left with this anti-cop mania? Why do you ascribe that to the left? And I wanted to explain, because it certainly was not for the sake of hyperbole. But what I do believe is that anti-cop has become very much the mainstream of the left. And I will cite for you the initiative that passed rather overwhelmingly on Tuesday, Initiative 940. Which is one of the most anti-cop initiatives that I've ever seen. And in it, of course, it's going to make it easier to criminally prosecute police officers, as I told you, in one of the most bizarre bits of legislation I've ever seen. They want to establish a citizens panel that will oversee police officers in our state. And the citizens panel will be made up of underrepresented communities, including undocumented people, youth, and previously incarcerated people. And I said, seriously? We're going to have illegals, children, and criminals have any say in overseeing police officers in our state. And when 60% of the people, now, I have talked to people who said, I didn't know that was in there. I wouldn't have voted for that. Well, shame on you. I talked about it extensively leading up to the election. And when you can pass something that is so fundamentally extremist, anti-cop, with 60% of the voters, and here in the Puget Sound area, in King County in particular, it was an overwhelming number of people passed one of the most fundamentally anti-cop initiatives that I've ever seen, one that most of law enforcement, and I will never understand the extremism of people like Sheriff Joe Hanknick, who said she supported it. But that's why. That's why I say when they're chanting, you know, these horrible things down in Portland, and we, the night before, had a majority of people pass the most anti-cop initiative that I've ever seen, I do think that that hatred of police officers has become the mainstream. And I'll tell you a little bit about the ramifications of that. We got a Facebook post from a Seattle police officer. And I'm not going to give his name because I'm surprised he gave his name on Facebook. But this is what's going on with our cops today. And this is not good for society, as we have, you know, the worst property crime in the country of any major city. We have the drug vagrants and criminals taking over our streets increasingly, rapists, murderers who are coming to our area from out of state because they know about the depolicing. Fair warning, he writes on Facebook. Rant about work ahead. I will never forget that moment. I was new to the job and I was responding to an overdose call in an alley in the U District. An individual was overdosing on heroin and was unresponsive. Officers located the man who was lying helpless in the dark, damp alley. Officers called for the fire department to hurry over and administer Narcan to the person in an attempt to save their life. My heart was beating rapidly as I watched a man be revived and brought back from the brink of death. I remember standing over them as they roused from their despondent state with excitement, thrilled to see someone given a second chance at life. I was expecting maybe a word of appreciation or relief from the user, but all the first responders received was a tongue-lashing because we interrupted his high. I remember being stunned and disappointed over his reaction. Unfortunately, I feel the same way as a law enforcement officer these days, because it seems like my friends and family on the department are trying to save a city that has no interest in being saved. Believe it or not, I have no interest in being a crime historian. My coworkers and I swore an oath to protect the public in a proactive manner, not a reactive manner, and we cringe when someone groans about how the police will never be there in a timely manner when needed. However, in this day and age, with every call and every contact, officers are pulling the lever on a figurative slot machine, praying they don't find themselves landing on a media-created jackpot featuring political opportunity and skewed context, such as choice segments of cell phone videos flashed on television screens to produce a false narrative designed to drum up emotion and forego facts. Myself and many other officers I know pull that lever hard and fast out of pride, out of work ethic, and most importantly, out of a desire to see the neighborhoods we patrol become safer every day. We pull that lever knowing the risk, understanding we could jeopardize our entire career if we encounter a desperate criminal determined to prevent another trip behind bars. And I'm not even halfway through this Facebook post. But we have cops who are feeling increasingly despondent about the lack of support. And this isn't made up. When I said yesterday that this, you know, Portland chant about all cops has become the mainstream of the left, I truly don't think I-940 is wildly different from what was being chanted on the streets of Portland. Now, you might disagree with me on that, but that's my explanation for all the people who, you know, with very good intent, contacted me and said, why are you lumping us all together? Because I'm telling you the reality. I'm telling you the reality of our streets throughout the Puget Sound area right now. The reality of what happens when there's depolicing. When cops have to make the decision, do I stop and intervene and risk being killed or going to prison? Or do I try to intervene and make our community safer? And that now has become a higher level of decision-making that cops have to make every time they roll past something. And I told you about the wife of a cop who texted me on Wednesday about I-940 and said, when my husband left for work this morning, I said, honey, slow your roll. You know, if you don't have to stop, if the consequences are getting so dire to just be a police officer, and we can't find good cops. We got open positions because why would somebody want to work in a city where a city council member calls an exonerated officer a murderer? And if you don't believe that that kind of anti-cop mania, hysteria, has become the mainstream, then you're just not paying attention. And so that's why I said what I said yesterday. That's why I continue to believe what I said yesterday and repeat today, that this is becoming all too often the mainstream of the left, and the left is driving the policy throughout the Puget Sound area right now. It's getting very dangerous. It's making the streets much more dangerous. It's making our homes much more perilous. And that's the reality and the truth of things. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top trending.
Oh, and then there's what's going on nationally. Yesterday we talked about that whole White House press conference, the Jim Acosta thing. It was quite the wild scene, as you know, when Jim Acosta wouldn't give up his microphone. An intern tried to take it out of his hands.
Well, no, it's true. Do you think they were actors? They weren't actors. They didn't come from Hollywood. These were people. This was an actual, you know, it happened a few days ago. And
they're hundreds of miles away, though.
Okay, I'm starting this clip a minute in because the president had given Acosta a very calm, reasoned answer to Acosta's question. And then Acosta decides he wants to debate.
Hundreds and hundreds of miles away. That's not an invasion.
Honestly, I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN.
Right.
And if you did it well, your ratings would be much better.
If I may ask one other question, are you worried?
That's enough.
Now the president's called on someone else. That's a minute 25 in, a minute 28 right here, that Jim Acosta has been grandstanding. And then that's when the White House intern tries to take the microphone.
Mr. President,
Excuse me, that's enough.
Okay, right there, that's when Jim Acosta initiated contact with this intern. She tries twice with her right hand to take the microphone, and she comes over the top of Acosta's arm those two times. And then the third time, she uses her left hand, comes under his arm. He brings his arm down on hers. So you have a grown man who's being told that his time is up, initiating contact with a early 20-something intern at the White House. It was a horrible scene. And that's when, you know, Trump went off on Acosta, and you know the rest.
And the way you treat other people are horrible. You shouldn't treat people that way. Go ahead, Peter.
In Jim's defense, I've traveled with him and watched him. He's a diligent reporter who busts.
Well, I'm not a big fan of yours either. So
I understand.
To be honest,
let me ask you a question, if I can. You aren't the best, Mr. President. You repeatedly over the course
okay,
of
just sit down, please.
Jim Acosta's still yelling out, "Are we still the enemy of the people?" And Trump responded, "Yeah, when you do fake news, you're enemy of the people." Well, CNN has been filled with nothing but fake news since then. Let me address something else that came up a lot yesterday on the show. I had tons of text messages who said, why don't you talk about the fact that the White House sent out a doctored video that was sped up to make Jim Acosta, his arm coming down on the intern, look worse than it actually was. I watched that so many times yesterday. And I had one website that had the original video and the supposed doctored video, absolute side-by-side, frame-by-frame, synced up. And they ended at the exact same moment. Now, if one video was sped up, they wouldn't end at the same instant on the same frame. The sped up video would have ended sooner. So I was a little incredulous at hearing everybody in the media, everybody, talk about this doctored video that the White House sent out. And so I looked into it because it made no sense if one had sped up. And I don't know for sure, but here's the explanation of that that makes the most sense. When you record video on a television broadcast quality camera, it's 30 frames per second. When you reduce that to a GIF that you embed in a tweet, it becomes about 10 frames a second. And in going from 30 frames a second to 10 frames, the video becomes a little bit jumpier. But it would still begin and end at the exact same moment. And when, you know, what the White House sent out was a retweet of this, you know, original tweet that had a GIF embedded in it. And I have no idea if it was doctored, but I guarantee it, neither does the Associated Press, the Seattle Times, all the TV stations who claimed something that made no sense. There's no way if one video was sped up that they would be able to start and finish at the exact same instant. And so I watched that yesterday morning. And I said, well, I'm just because everybody else is saying they sent out a doctored video. That's not how I roll. I interpret things myself. I'm certainly not going to listen to what other news organizations say in this era where media has lost its collective mind. And so I believe today that me not repeating what I think was a lie from almost every news organization in the country that the White House sent out a doctored video, I'm proud that I don't just take things at face value and that I interpret them with my own eyes and then I give you my view of the world through the prism of how I view things. And so that's why for the hundred of you who just accept what is said on Twitter and by most in the media, when you accept that at face value, you better understand there's a pretty good chance these days that you're being played. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Going to check the news for you. And then our weekly conversation with Seahawks coach Pete Carroll is next on the Dory Monson Show.
This is the Pete Carroll Show.
All right, here we go now, here we go now, here we go.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the Hawks. The Pete Carroll Show is presented by Les Schwab and Bellevue Rare Coins. Now with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, here's Dory Monson.
Well, on this Friday, the Seahawks have a very tough test ahead as they go down to the L.A. Coliseum to take on the Rams. To talk about that and what has preceded it, the coach of the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, joins us. Coach, always great to talk with you.
What's up, Dory?
You are. We got a lot.
Yeah,
to...
I am. What's going on? We got to get ready to go.
You know what? You got some tough shoes to fill here because yesterday on my show in this time slot, I had Joe Walsh from the Eagles on. So
wow,
I know.
Wow.
So you got to keep up the 12:30 to 1 o'clock greatness on the show here today. Okay.
Did he take off and pull off any riffs for you or anything like that with a guitar or just kind of just straight talk?
He did sing for me. You know what he did? You'll like this because you're a music guy. He took 10 minutes to tell me how the song Hotel California came together. And it was
really?
Yeah, it was the most minute detailed explanation of the assembling of a song that I've ever heard. It was really cool. It was fantastic. It was really fun for me.
I'll have to go back and listen to it.
I know. Well, you and I have had our musical differences. You went after me a couple years ago because I told you I was a Billy Joel fan.
Billy's a nice guy.
Well, I know, but you just didn't like my taste in music that much.
Well, I'm I've never heard anybody say they're a Billy Joel fan. It wasn't somebody really, really old.
Oh, that's hurtful. Sorry. Now you're just being hurtful now.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad.
Okay, let's talk about a little football instead. So okay. You've had a few days to, before we talk about the game coming up, to, kind of analyze what happened on Sunday against the Chargers. So what have you figured out?
Well, we missed our opportunities. It just killed me. That we had a couple shots in there that were huge plays in the game that we missed out on that we needed in a good tight game. And then we made a couple mistakes in there that just cost us and got us behind the sticks. We ran the ball pretty well. We played tough throughout the game and kept it close. But the opportunities missed were too much to overcome, playing against a real good team.
And I know that you expressed your satisfaction that you guys had a chance right at the end to maybe tie the game. And it is remarkable that no matter how the flow of a game seems to be going, that you guys are never out of it. And you always give yourselves a chance. And I know I've talked with you about it before, but can you give me kind of some next level stuff on, is that something that's coachable? Is it culture? What is it that even when things are not flowing your way, that you have a chance at the end of these things?
Well, I first would say that it's players that can come through and make plays. They're out there, got to do it. And Russell's leadership on the offense and Bobby's leadership on the defense, those guys are always, they're always beating the drum that we're going to win, and that's part of it. I think that in the culture that there's a real positive makeup to us where we look to see what we could accomplish and what's capable and what we're capable of, and always focus on that next shot, the next step, the next opportunity that comes your way. And that gives us a mentality of hope and the kind of thing that kind of hope that you need to be resilient and to find the belief and the trust it takes to continue to come through, even though things look kind of bleak at times. So,
sure.
I think that's something that we're really in support of all throughout our program. And from the moment these guys get here, we talk that way, and the culture is based on that kind of mentality.
When we talked at this time last week, Russell Wilson was coming off an almost perfect game. I mean, statistically, by the NFL QB rating, it was a perfect game against the Lions. And then Sunday wasn't his best. What needs to happen for him, for you, for me, to achieve a high level of excellence and then get the kind of consistency that we all want, that we all strive for?
Well, it's way more simple than you might think from my perspective. And that's you just got to keep doing things right, and you just, the things that you know how to do, you just keep doing them. And the things that you're accomplished at and that you've established a tremendous consistency, that just needs to continue to show up. And that usually carries you through. And so when you miss some stuff that normally that you do or normally that you count on, then it just throws you off. You're not as good as as you need to be. And that's really where it happens. So it's much simpler in that we just got to keep doing the things right. And if we do that longer than the other guys, then we usually wind up outlasting them and winning.
Yeah. Okay. So now midpoint of the season, which is probably a pretty good time to just do some big picture reflecting. So I know you're big into goal setting. And I'm guessing before the season, you have a sense and a vision of how you want things to unfold. So now that you're at the midpoint, what has reached that vision? What's fallen short of it here?
Well, just in the biggest picture, we're not on top of the battling right at the top of the division like we want to be. That's not there right now because of the start of the season, and we didn't get off the way we needed to. The other side of it is that we have found the winning style. We found a championship style about us that can get us the opportunity to really make a good run here in the second half of the season. And that's the consistency of how we're doing things on offense. And running the football is right at the heart of that. Playing good defense up front is right at the heart of that. And our special teams is really developing some consistency that we're fired up about. So those are the building blocks that give you a chance to have a real good year. Now we got to put it together in the second half. For instance, we're playing the Rams this week. They've had a really good first half, and they lost the opener in the first game of the second half. Well, how this thing finishes out is what's going to tell the story. And so here we go. And we have to come through and make our run at it in the fashion that we know we're capable of doing, and take it one week at a time and just see where we wind up.
Okay, and as you head down there to the Coliseum, where you achieved so much greatness at USC, and it seemed like a little more of a novelty, a couple of years ago when you were going back for the first time, but when you go down there, do you still allow yourself a quiet moment and think about some of your favorite experiences there?
Well, I got to tell you that there's moments, yes. All in the big picture now, it's not the biggest thing in the world, but when you get in that environment and just flying into LA and driving down the 110 and all the things that are so familiar, and walking in the Coliseum, that's a lot of years there, So yeah. You can imagine if years down the road coming back here to CenturyLink, there's going to be a million thoughts that go through your mind when you have the opportunity, and that's kind of the same way. So, it's fun playing there. More than that, I like winning there, you know. And the challenge of that is fun. It's a little additional fun to when you walk out of the winners like we did last year. We'll do that again, So, but there certainly is there's a big history. That's for certain.
And I don't know if I've asked you this. Have you ever said what your absolute favorite moment in that building has been?
Well, I do have one, but I don't think you've asked me.
Okay.
We had a young kicker there that died at the end of the season, and he had an accident and died. And the next year we came back when we got to our first extra point of the game, the first game after he passed away, we went out there with 10 guys on the field, didn't have a kicker, and just took a delay a game. And it was a tribute to Mario, and when we did that, the fans kind of caught on to it in the middle of what was going on. There was just a resounding roar of the stadium, and then we took the penalty and kicked the extra point and made it. But it was a moment just to pay tribute to one of our guys that we had loved so much and that was such a great kid in the program and had passed away. That was my favorite moment.
How did you come up with that? Or when in context with, in the time frame leading up to that game, when did you come up with that thought?
Well, I think it was a combination of the guys in the kicking game, the punter and the snapper, and the conversation got looking for suggestions, and I think they probably came up with that. I love that we did that, and it was such a cool moment that it was worth it.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. Very nice. Hey, hold on, Coach. Pete Carroll is with us. He's going to spend the rest of the half hour with us, and we'll also talk about the huge game coming up on Sunday against the L.A. Rams. All of that as the Pete Carroll Show continues here on the Dory Monson Show. Pete Carroll is with us, and Coach, you talked about the Rams. Obviously, they're off to a great start. They had a tough one last Sunday, and I heard you say a couple days ago in your press conference that, Drew Brees is just playing out of his mind this season, and that's really what slayed the Rams. And, I look around the league, Pete, and I see Tom Brady, and I see Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and all these guys who are the long-toothed veterans. Is there something going on with the rules where experience at quarterback is maybe more valuable than raw athleticism? Why are all these guys succeeding at this level at that age?
Well, young guys are doing – you missed Philip Rivers in there too.
Yeah, exactly.
But the young guys are doing well too. Mahomes is having a great year, and Jared Goff's having another big year. It's just the passing game is just at the all-time height. And I think it's a combination of evolution of just the way we look at throwing the football and all of the concepts that go on to support it. But it's also the rules, too. The rules are totally in favor and have continued to favor production in the throwing game. And that's part of it. And it's just guys just maxing out, all aspects of the growth, the evolution, the rules and the structure of the game, and just everybody just getting so much better at throwing and catching and all of that.
Yeah, and I'm sure sports science has a lot to do with it. I mean, when you and I were kids, I remember when George Blanda was playing at age 40, and that was such a big deal. But he looked like an old man when he was 40.
Yeah, that's a good point. He did.
Tom Brady, still is worthy of a hot supermodel wife.
Well, George might have been worthy of that too. I don't want to cut short, but you're right though. There's a whole new world of performance training and high performance training, you know, mental side and physical side, and from the side of nutrition and good recovery and rest practice and all that kind of stuff. That has really, I mean, and Tom's a really living example of that. You know, he is in great shape. He's maximizing his flexibility and the quickness he can maintain and the strength to throw the ball like he has over the years. I mean, that he's just prolonging his career by working the way he is and preparing the way he is. And it's a whole lifestyle. And so I think that's not uncommon in a lot of sports, and you know, that guys are just better than they've ever been at taking care of themselves. And we understand so much more, and the science is behind it. So I think you're seeing good examples of that.
Yeah. I mean, what LeBron is doing, I mean, he right. not only is so talented, but he outworks everybody else. And it's,
yeah.
It pays
Kobe
off.
Had a great finish to his career, too, yeah. You know, and last. And then some of the baseballers are doing it. And it's just, we're as high tech as we've ever been, and you're seeing the benefits of it.
Okay. Before I get just a little more into the Rams, injuries. I know that you've had three very high profile ones you've been dealing with and resting guys this week. Chris Carson, DJ Fluker, Bradley McDougal. Can you give me an update 2 days out from game time here?
Yeah, those guys are all really game time decisions. And so they're just guys that are just nursing kind of nagging things that have been bothering them, and we're trying to figure out how to manage their way through it, and then find out nearer to game time if they can play for us. So we're still waiting and seeing.
Okay, all right, we'll wait for the inactives on that. And as for the Rams, they are having a great season. They were the last undefeated team. Are we going to see another undefeated team? I mean, you knew how to do that at the college level as well as anybody, but in the NFL, are we going to see that in my lifetime here again?
I think it's totally possible. Yeah, well, yeah, of course. Yeah, it could happen, and I don't see any reason why it isn't. Why it wouldn't? You know, but it's so rare. It, obviously, it's once in a lifetime. This, but I can see it happen for sure. But there's a lot of elements that go into that. You know, and I don't see why it wouldn't. You know, don't add any more games. Keep it at 16, and yeah. You know, but there's a chance, sure.
Okay, you played these guys so well up here, and it is interesting when you have games so close together against the same opponent. So, you know, just tell me, how do you stop an offense like that, and how do you exploit? I mean, because they've given up a bunch of points this year. I know that.
Yeah, they really have, and they've been so far ahead that they get maybe, you know, there's some giveaway points in some of those games, but. But if you look, since we played them, they've been really close games, and they've been fortunate, you know, to get their wins, just like anybody in those close games, because anything can happen. But their offense continues to really just function at a really high level, and they're running the ball better than anybody, and the quarterback is playing just lights out, and they're not giving the ball up. You know, to beat these guys, you're going to have to take the ball off them two or three times in the game and make something out of them as well. And so... You know, that's part of the challenge, but they're really just well-rounded, and they're solid, and their kicking game has good experience. They've got a kicker and a punter and returners that are good, and so they have a really solid football team, and you're going to have to beat them by taking the football away.
Okay, that'll be some we'll watch for. Man, when the Packers played down there a couple weeks ago, it sounded like Lambeau. There were so many Packer fans. I expect the 12s will be well-represented on Sunday.
There's no doubt. The 12s show up wherever we go, and they even showed up in Europe.
Yeah.
So they'll certainly go to LA. So I'm sure we'll have a good following, and we'll count on that. Packers played those guys really well. They had them going for a while, and just couldn't quite hang on, but they gave a good showing.
Okay. Good stuff. Go get them, Coach. I appreciate it, and look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, Dory. Take care.
Pete Carroll joins us every Friday, and I want to give you right now a chance to win tickets to the Thursday night game coming up just 6 days from now. Against the Green Bay Packers at CenturyLink Field. Go to MyNorthwest.com, enter the /win. MyNorthwest.com/win. Enter the code word Friday. You got to do it before my show's over at 3 o'clock, and that'll give you a chance to win Thursday night tickets to the Seahawks and Packers. MyNorthwest.com/win. Enter the word Friday. Best 15 next.